Hello and welcome to today's podcast episode. I'm your host, Mary, and you're listening to the Positivity Podcast. Today, I want to talk about 7 self-help techniques from a therapist because my mom's a therapist and I asked her for 7 self-help techniques that you can include into your routine or just try them out if you want to work on your, on your self-care and if you're struggling as probably every one of us does. So I would have really loved to just do an interview with her, but unfortunately my mom doesn't really speak English that well, so it was hard for her to phrase all those things and say everything that she wanted to say about that topic in English. So I decided to just go and ask her for 7 tips and then put them in my own words. And yeah, I really think that my mom's a great therapist and that we can take a lot from all that. A lot of those techniques or practices are probably a bit weird in the beginning, I would say. At least they were for me. And I often told my mom, especially when I was a bit younger, that I don't really want to try any of those because they seem a bit esoteric or I don't know. She works a lot with visualizations, and it is actually scientifically proven how great visualizations work. And even though we might feel a bit awkward visualizing stuff like that, it's actually proven to help so much because our brains can't differentiate between what's happening in real life and what's happening just in our imagination. So it's so helpful. And yeah, I just wanted to put that as a small disclaimer. I hope my mom's not offended by that, but some of those things might sound a bit weird in the beginning, but they're proven to be so helpful. So I really wanted to make an episode about it because I feel like if you don't have the means to go to therapy, because either you don't have the money or it can be quite hard to find a therapist as well. Maybe some people are also afraid of judgment when they're thinking about going to therapy, even though that really shouldn't be a reason. But yeah, even if you are in therapy right now, I feel like those things are just really helpful because not every therapist works with those visualization techniques. So yeah, I think those are just some amazing tools and some amazing self-help techniques. So I can't wait to tell you about what my mom told me when I asked her. What are your 7 tips that you would give to someone who would just like to have a toolkit for some self-help techniques? So the first thing is learning to endure, not avoid. I think in our today's society, it's so easy to distract ourselves and to avoid certain feelings and to just use substances to avoid feeling bad or looking at certain problems we have or we are facing. So I think a lot of people, me included sometimes, use substances like media, shopping, or drugs, alcohol, for example, or excessive eating or not eating. And that's actually the first thing that she mentioned, that most people need to learn how to sit with their feelings instead of using those substances to push them away and to avoid them. The most important thing when it comes to literally all of those points is to stay aware. I already mentioned that in my last week's episode, I think, but it's so important to practice mindfulness and to, just trying to stay aware of your thinking patterns, but also your feelings, and just trying to develop that inner observer more and more, that you're able to observe yourself all the time. It's so important to always be able to tell what you are feeling and what you are thinking right now. Because only when we realize what's going on inside of us, we can actually work against that and keep ourselves in a positive, productive mindset. So a technique that she mentioned when it comes to that was actually closing your eyes and just focusing on your feet. Because many people don't really know what mindfulness and becoming aware actually means. So when you practice it for the first time, that's a really good technique you can use. Close your eyes and focus on your feet. And when you do that, it's actually like a really small meditation, because you will realize you are not your thoughts. When you get out of your head into your feet, you can actually realize, okay, there's more than my thoughts. My thoughts are not my identity. I can observe my thoughts the same way as I can observe my feet and the tension in my back, or like the feeling of air on my skin. So my thoughts are not all that I am. My thoughts are just another process that is going on in my body. But I am so much more than that. And I can actually learn how to observe my thoughts and to listen to my thoughts and to listen to my feelings. And when you actually found that awareness and that mindfulness, then actually start listening to your thoughts without judgment. Because some people struggle with meditation because they can't silence their minds. But that's not actually what meditation is about. Because I don't think we can actually silence our thoughts entirely. We can just learn how to detach from them and to find that observer, as my mom names it. And that observer, he doesn't judge. He just observes. So try to find that inner observer and realize that your thoughts are not your identity. You can watch them from a neutral position, from a non-judgmental position. And in actual practice, that can look like you having a really bad day, for example, or like having a really bad feeling, and you're just one step away from reaching to your distraction of choice, whether that be like a cold beer, not because you're just craving a cold beer or you're in good company and you want to have a fun night, but because you want to suppress a bad feeling or the frustration of a bad day. That can also be a chocolate cake or the urge to go shopping or the urge to like grab your phone and distract yourself for hours on Instagram. Not because you feel like it and you feel like, okay, I'm going to treat myself, but because you want to suppress something. And when you realize that, because you practiced mindfulness and you realize, okay, I feel bad right now. I have a bad feeling and I just have the urge to suppress it with one of those substances. Then what you can do is to put a mental stop sign. And that might sound a bit weird at first, but it's actually proven to be so effective. Like when you practice that mindfulness and you really ask yourself, okay, am I doing this right now? Do I like overeat or crave alcohol or have the urge to buy something or whatever it is? Is it because I want to suppress something and I don't feel good right now? Then really try to visualize a stop sign, a really big red stop sign, and then connect with a loving aspect of yourself, such as an inner mentor. And my mom really loves to work with those visualizations because, as I said, they are proven to be so effective, and our brain can't differentiate whether it's real or if it's a visualization. So it's really so effective to not only try to talk loving to yourself, but actually visualize an inner mentor, an inner loving aspect of yourself. That can be a mother or a sister or something that you're actually like visualizing as really loving, and like actually try to see a person or maybe yourself and try to visualize actually a person who represents that loving aspect, a part of yourself that is only loving and that is only there to uplift you. And this loving part of yourself can remind you that you can sit with your feelings and you don't need to avoid them. Ask yourself, what's the worst that can happen if I feel this? Because feelings won't kill us. It might feel like that sometimes because feelings can get really intense, but in the end, nothing's gonna happen. It can be really hard to sit with your feelings, but it's the only way we can actually heal. Because if we always suppress them and avoid them with those substances that are so easy to find nowadays, we don't give ourselves the opportunity to actually heal. Remember, emotions won't harm you. But also remember, very strong coping mechanisms like alcohol or eating, not eating, or like whatever your coping mechanism is, they can be so difficult to break. So it's important to put a lot of work into developing that nurturing presence. Work with visualizations like the inner mentor, the inner loving part, and the inner stop sign when you start to realize that you are trying to suppress something. And be really loving with yourself. Really connect to that inner loving part of yourself and nurture that. Because as I said, it can be really hard to break those coping mechanisms, and you need to be loving with yourself if you fail to. Because sometimes, even though you tell yourself, okay, I can survive that, those feelings won't kill me, I'm loving to myself and I won't go for this substance right now because I know that it's important to sit with my feelings. And if you realize it too late and you've already had those two or three beers, or you already went shopping, or you already did overeat, be loving to yourself as well and say, okay, I realized that that was my way to avoiding certain feelings. And even like realizing that after is already a huge achievement. So be loving and be gentle with yourself. It's a process. And I really hope those techniques can help you. The second thing my mom mentioned was changing perspective. And since she works with people, she has a lot of experience of what people are usually struggling with. And to be honest, like, I found myself in all of those seven things. I also struggle with those things still from time to time. And I feel like I'm a really positive person who always try to stay positive and only see the good in things and in people. But sometimes I also fail, and sometimes I have some really negative thoughts and some really bad thoughts about other people. And what she means by changing perspective is to, again, be aware and notice how often you actually complain about things, whether that's a situation or a certain person. Sometimes when we start practicing to stay aware of our thoughts and our feelings, we realize we're actually complaining a lot. Because that's part of our human instincts, because in earlier times it was so necessary to focus on the negative, dangerous things, because those were the things that were like, as I said, dangerous for us. We needed to put most of our focus on the negative things to identify danger from early on, and all the positive things, our lives didn't really depend on those. So it just makes sense that we tend to focus more on the negative things. So complaining is something that is pretty much just in our human nature. But we developed so much that we're now able to change our perspective. So consciously shift your perspective by, again, just being aware, being mindful, and realizing that you have those negative bad thoughts and that you're complaining. And then especially when it comes to another person, because other people sometimes can be quite triggering for us. And I'm sure we all have this one person in our office, or in, I don't know, in our family, or in any kind of situation we're just regularly in that we can't really avoid. And I'm pretty sure we all have this person that is kind of annoying us sometimes, and when we have those like negative feelings about them, remember that there are people who love them. That's what my mom told me. So she said, like, remember that this person is also loved by other people, and there are so many lovable aspects about them, and try to like actively find the positive, love-worthy parts about them. If that's a colleague of yours, for example, maybe you can realize, oh, this person actually makes coffee for everyone, or takes out the trash, or does things for other people, or this person is a really good listener, or I don't know, I'm sure you will, like, if that person is in your daily life, then you would probably know enough about them to find some loving aspects about them. And if it's just someone you barely know. For example, like a person in the car in front of you that isn't speeding up and you're getting really mad and you're like, what is this person doing? Like, why isn't she speeding up? What the fuck? Then try to imagine what they might be going through and imagine like maybe they had a really rough day or maybe they're going through a heartbreak or maybe they received some really bad news today and that's why they're just not focused on the road and they're might be acting a bit weird. Or whether that's like a person in a coffee shop who like bumped you, didn't apologize and then like, I don't know, said something mean as well. Try to be loving and try to find explanations on why this person might have had a really bad day. So just for the sake of having a happier day for yourself, honestly, because if you're loving and understanding to other people, that will only like protect our own energy and boost our own mood. Because honestly, that person doesn't care if you have like a negative or a positive thought about them because they'll never know. But it changes your energy and it changes your view on life and it changes your day. Because if you're complaining and if you're having those negative thoughts about people and situations, it will put your energy down. And if you choose to be gentle and if you choose to change your perspective and you choose to include those things into your day, like every time you realize, oh, I'm having this really bad thought about this person and I have this really negative energy towards this person, or I'm really starting to complain about that certain situation, and you try to find explanations on why this person is acting that way and what is loving about that other person and or could be loving about that other person or what is like actually good about the situation that you are in. If you actively change your perspective, you can change your own energy and you can have a happier life for yourself. So yeah, that's the second part or like the second hack that she was giving me. The third part is quite deep and it's about the question, who am I? Because I feel like the process of exploring ourselves and exploring our identity can be one that we can get really lost in, and some people don't really know who they actually are, and I think it's really hard to like actually be clear about who am I. And what she said, what we can like actually make use of in those situations when you're struggling with your identity and you're struggling with what you actually are, then you can break yourself down into different parts of yourself, like the inner critic. Because if you differentiate yourself from your inner critic, that can do a lot with your mindset, because we are oftentimes so harsh to ourselves and there are a lot of inner voices that tell us that we are not good enough, and those voices are not who we are and they don't define who we are, because we all have this inner critic. But if we visualize those critical voices that we all have, and yeah, the times that we criticize ourselves, if we visualize those parts as a person, like the inner critic, then we can see that this is not who we actually are. There's so much more. She also mentioned the nurturing part, the loving part, or the impulsive teenager who takes a lot of risks and does a lot of reckless things. Identify all these parts that you have within yourself and try to give them identities. So as I said, those are like actual practices my mom is implementing in her therapy session. So if you want to do some self-therapy, then you should sit down and try this and then create an internal parliament where all these parts have a seat in. And this parliament is led by one wise adult self who knows what's right. And we all have this one rational adult part, but actually when we're in some emotional situations and when we're having a bad day or when we're angry or when we're scared, there's like other parts taking over the parliament. For example, like a hurt child. We're having a bad day and then this hurt child comes out and it's taking over the parliament and it starts complaining and crying the whole day, taking control of our whole body, acting super moody and weird, and that's not actually our adult self. It's another part that took over the parliament. And if we stay mindful and if we practice those visualizations, we can tell ourselves, okay, this hurt child that's part of my personality really needs some attention today. And it's okay that I have a bad day, and it's okay that my inner child needs a lot of attention. And I can take this visualization techniques and tell my inner child, okay, I see you. It's okay that you have a bad day. You are allowed to have a bad day, but let me take over. Let me handle my day with my rational adult self. And you are allowed to be present as well. But all the decisions and everything that's happening on the outside, I will handle for you today. So that way you don't push your emotions away, you validate them and you allow them to be there, and you allowed your inner moody child to be there, and you don't put yourself down for it. You acknowledge that it's a part of you, but it's okay to let another part take over. And over time you can work on those parts. If you identified this crying child, or one part that my mom also mentioned was an aggressive part, when you get angry really easily, you can transform that aggressive part into a protective energy. Because what she said, and I think that's really important, you can't get rid of any of those parts. Because they're part of you, you know? You can work on those parts and you can transform those parts, but you can never actually get rid of them. So if you have this, like, huge aggressive man, then you can transform that part of yourself into a bouncer, for example. So that was the example that she gave me. I think it's a really funny one because, yeah, that like visualizes so well how you can transform those parts and like use this aggressive energy. And whenever you feel that part is coming up, you can again acknowledge it and say, okay, I realize that this aggressive part of me is coming up now, and it's okay that it's there, and it's there to protect me, and it's okay that it protects me. And I know when that part of me comes up, it's because I feel that I need protection, and I can transform that part and say, okay, maybe somebody crossed my boundary and it's making me aggressive, but I can use that aggressive part of me to protect me. I don't need to act irrationally and do aggressive things. I can just acknowledge that I need protection and protect myself in other ways. I can tell that part, that protective, aggressive part of myself, thank you for letting me know that I need protection. I will handle it from here. And actually this self-talk, even if it sounds a bit weird because you're like talking to different personalities and different parts of yourself, is so helpful because it makes things so easy applicable, because your brain can like process that so easily through those visualizations. And as I said, like it will make things so much easier to handle, because like if you just tell yourself, okay, next time when I'm aggressive, I'm just going to act differently, that won't work. But if you're like actually visualize an aggressive part of yourself, an aggressive person within yourself that may look like an aggressive, huge, muscular man, and you like actually realize, oh, that man is coming up right now and is trying to protect me and like lifts up my fist, then I can actually remember, oh yeah, it's trying to protect me, but I don't actually need to lift up my fist. I can protect myself in other ways. And through that visualization, it's easier to change your actions. So the fourth self-help technique is about accepting help. And that is also something that so many people are struggling with, me included, because I feel like I'm really struggling sometimes with being a people pleaser and yeah, just struggling to accept help because I don't want to be bothering people. I don't know. And I think a lot of people are struggling with that. We often feel overwhelmed, but we still say, no thanks, I don't need any help, I can handle it, when someone offers us help. And sometimes we even take on others' tasks to be liked or to match our self-image, even if it exhausts us. Because as I said, I think many of us are actually people-pleasing a lot, and we think, okay, if I do this for that certain person, or if I take another task. So if I can manage to handle that by myself, people will think I'm strong, and I have this self-image of myself of being independent and strong and hardworking. And if I don't do this, if I ask for help, or if I don't take this one more task, then I will not match the image I have of myself. And again, it all comes back to staying mindful, staying aware of what's going on. Notice how often you avoid asking for help or actively refuse it. If you find yourself thinking, why am I always the one doing everything? My schedule is so busy and now I took on this other task as well. And I'm overwhelmed, but I don't allow myself to ask for help. Then pause and reflect. And actually practice accepting help when it's offered. Next time someone asks you for help, try to just say yes, thank you. And when you're overwhelmed, actively ask for someone to help you, because it's okay to ask for help. We all need help sometimes. That's why we need a community. That's like just so normal for human beings to be dependent on each other and to need each other. And you shouldn't overload your schedule just because you're afraid of asking for help. It won't make you less strong. It won't make you less independent. But it's just so important, because we all need help from time to time. And it's a skill to be able to ask for help and to be able to accept help. I think that's a really important one that we all have to remember. It's nothing bad to ask for help. It won't make you weak. It won't make you less independent. It's just something that we all need sometimes. Help. And even if we end up bothering someone and loading up someone else's schedule, but if we do not ask, we won't get any help. And of course, if you know that the person always says yes and they already have a busy schedule, maybe you should not ask them, just to be a nice person and to be caring and gentle to others as well. But if you just do know that this person has still enough time to overtake that one task and your schedule is already super full, then just go and ask. Okay, accepting help. So the next part is letting go of perfectionism. And I think sometimes we don't realize what high expectations we actually hold upon ourselves and where those expectations actually come from. Because often they are rooted in childhood, and they can stem from feelings of not being good enough or unlovable, or just feelings we had when we were a child, when we were raised, and feelings that we internalized through certain actions that our caretakers took that led to us feeling those certain ways and internalizing those certain beliefs. So there's this practice, and when we had this interview for this episode, I was actually a bit like skeptical myself, but it's like, when you think about it, it's such a good practice, because letting go of perfectionism is so important for our mental health, because it's really harmful. Because when we hold these high expectations upon ourselves, there is no perfect and we will never be perfect. And when we don't let go of our perfectionism, it will only make us sad in the long term and stressed and overwhelmed. So letting go of perfectionism is so important, and one way to practice this is to intentionally do a few things poorly each week. Of course, those shouldn't be like really important things, like a really important weekly report that your job relies on, or I don't know, it shouldn't be like something super important, but there are always things that are kind of neglectable. And if you like intentionally choose to do those poorly and give us permission to not do well and to do something imperfectly, even if others might expect you or you self expect yourself to do something, decide to do just a few things each week, actively not perfect. Just consciously show the world that you are not always perfect, and let others see that it's okay when things aren't ideal. I think it can be really challenging to do something wrong on purpose, but again, try to bring out the loving side, like the loving part in yourself that is accepting and put the inner critic away. Like, put the inner critic to the back of the parliament and try to bring out your loving side and be like, yeah, it's okay. I don't have to do everything perfect. And this week I will screw up on purpose. And that's okay because I'm not perfect and I'm not supposed to be perfect. And I can show the world that it's okay not to be perfect. And to actually put that on practice, I think that also counts for most of the things I said. You should write them down, because like, if you don't write those parts of yourself down, and if you don't write down what you did actively not perfect this week, it won't stick as much, and you won't like really stick to it if you don't like write it down. Because if it's only in your head, like, our heads are like chaotic and crazy, and we should like put it down on paper to like optimize the effect it has. And that fits very well to the next practice, which is journaling self-care practices, but really specific ones. You should like actually note down what you did for your self-care this week. It's a really good practice to realize how much care you actually take of yourself. Because sometimes we feel like, oh yeah, I do a lot of self-care, but what do we actually do? Like, what do we actually do for ourselves? So for 1 week, only 1 week, we can all do that, okay? It's hard to develop a habit, but for 1 week, we can all stick to journaling. So for 1 week, each evening, note where you took good care of yourself that day. Maybe, for example, you canceled a plan because you were really tired and your body gave you the signal, that's just too much for me today. I'm not feeling well, and I know that I already made plans with this person, but my body tells me that I should rest. So my self-care practice was today that I canceled that plan because I was listening to my body, which is an act of self-care. Write down everything that you can remember. Listening to a self-care podcast like mine or like whatever you were doing, like just write it down in the evening. Just reflect on what you did for yourself, like purely for yourself. And then also write down what you didn't do, like where you didn't take care of yourself. Maybe you did go to the meetup, even though your body gave you the signal that you shouldn't. And after that, you felt bad or drained. And you realize, oh, I didn't really take good care of myself today. Like, I shouldn't have been going there. I already knew that it wasn't a good decision, but I did it anyway. So I didn't really take good care of myself. But again, don't judge yourself for it. Just write it down. Free of judgment. Just write it down. 1 week. And then the third practice, the third journaling practice, is observe people who are very skilled at self-care. That can be online, but that can, of course, also be in your everyday life. Maybe you have a person at work who like strictly sticks to their breaks and you feel like, wow, this person is really taking good care of themselves. They are taking breaks when they feel that they're tired. They're like drinking their water. They're eating really healthy foods. And they, I don't know, maybe they do another self-care practice, maybe stretching in the office or who knows. Like maybe you have like this one person in your day that you realize, wow, this person is really taking good care of themselves because they did this or that. And then just write it down. That can also be online. Maybe you see someone online and of course, like, the online world is not the reality, and sometimes influencers seem like they're taking good care of themselves even though they don't. But like, if you see someone online and you're like, wow, this person looks like she's or he is really taking good care of himself, and then you can just like observe that and write down what this person was doing, and maybe you include it next time in your own routine as well. So this journaling practice will actually help you to realize where you already take good care of yourself and where you are still struggling. Because if you write down where you do not take good care of yourself, then of course you will realize, okay, I need to work on that. I think that's a really good journaling practice. And I probably should do that as well, because I also have some times where I do not take good care of myself, and sometimes I'm trying to ignore that, but I'm not perfect as well, and even though I try my best, I'm struggling as well. But I think this is what gives me inspiration for my podcast as well. So it's also a good thing, because if I realize I'm struggling with something and I'm also having a hard time with a certain aspect, then it gives me inspiration to talk about it and like to heal together and to make progress together. You know what I mean? That's like the purpose of my podcast. I'm not having this podcast because I'm perfect, but I want to like grow with you. You know what I mean? So yeah, I think I can still like inspire and talk about those topics, even though I'm not perfect in any of them. Okay, I'm drifting off. Let's come to the last point, which is setting boundaries. And there's another visualization technique for home. So if you're struggling to set boundaries and your needs often merge with others' expectations, then stand in a room, visualize all those expectations and all those things that you're having a hard time to keep away from you, because you just can't, or you're just like struggling really hard with setting boundaries. Visualize all those things you have a hard time with, like just visualize the feeling of something like getting too close and you're having a hard time to say no, and all those expectations you have upon yourself and the expectations others have on you. And then like visualize that and imagine and like actually do take your hands up and brush them all off of you. Like actually take your hands and like brush them away, like an arm length away. And then visualize a shield around you. Like you push them an arm length away and now there's a shield around you, an arm length around you. You can visualize that as like a white bubble that is around you, or like an actual shield, and nothing gets through that. And that's your boundary. And then practice to recall this shield in daily situations where things feel too close. If you feel like, oh my gosh, I feel this person has an expectation of me and it really stresses me out because I don't know if I can meet it or I don't want to meet it, then visualize this shield. Like actually visualize it and visualize all those expectations are staying behind that shield. They're just behind the shield. So you're safe from them. They can't get close to you. They can't like put weight on your chest because they won't reach your chest. They're an arm length away. And then you can decide whether you want to take actions to meet those expectations or if you don't want to, because you have that shield and you can say no because those expectations won't reach you. And this is such a strong visualization, because maybe it feels weird, but nobody can see in your head, nobody knows what you're thinking, and nobody will know that you're visualizing this weird shield, because you won't tell that person. You will just like have it in your head and nobody will know. Okay, so you don't need to feel cringe, because it's only in your head. Nobody will know whether you do that or not, so don't feel cringe. Nobody will know. And as I said, it's scientifically proven to be so effective to visualize things like that, and it's an easy tool that you can always recall that will really help you in those situations. The only thing you have to do is to remember it and to apply it. Be mindful, realize when you're struggling, and recall those techniques. They're from a therapist, okay? They're proven to work, so try to take them by heart and actually, yeah, try to include some of them, because there are, as I said for the 10th time today, they are so effective. So yeah, I really hope that you're taking something from that episode. I really want to thank my mom again for giving me all that content, because she's a great therapist, and I feel like all of those tips are so easy to include and they're so helpful. And yeah, there's such easy techniques to include in your everyday life and improve those small bad habits we all have. So yeah, thank you so much for listening today. If you enjoyed this week's episode, feel free to share it with your friends or family members. Don't forget to give this podcast a 5-star rating if you haven't already. That will really help me grow the podcast. And For more self-care content, feel free to follow me on Instagram. It's the.positivity.podcast. So yeah, feel free to follow me on Instagram as well. And yeah, so thanks again for listening. I hope you have a great week. And yeah, I see you next week, guys. Bye.